Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan.
I'm Hillary.
And I'm Kelso.
Hi, guys.
Hi, we haven't seen you in so long. You have been away with your little new baby, Serafina.
Got a baby. Went and had a baby.
No big deal. Just had
no
a baby.
No big deal. MBD. Super chill.
But we hate this in the era of coronavirus. You haven't been into the bookstore to show off your new one.
I know. We'll be there next month, though. I come back physically in October, and she'll be with me for a couple months. So you guys will get lots of baby time starting.
We're going to have the do you cover the baby or not cover the baby problem.
Yeah. She'll be in the stroller. She'll be in her stroller all covered up behind the register. So
the stroller issue has been an issue. I actually brought in floating row cover to float over babies, but I don't even know if it works.
Who knows?
It's so sad.
It's a weird time.
Let me ship your books for you.
Yeah, everyone wear your masks and shop from us.
I'm amazed by how flexible small children are. Like, parents are freaking out saying, I can't put a mask on my child. And the two-year-olds are like, I'm fine. Give me the mask. Mm-hmm.
my three-year-old loves her masks. She has a little selection of them that we got from Disney. And so they all have like either Mickey or Minnie on them. And she like picks out which one she wants to wear. And she like puts it on herself and like thinks it's the coolest thing. And yeah, she's like super chill about it. And then there's adults throwing tantrums and she's just kind of like,
And this is why the world will go on.
Yes.
Because our children are amazing.
Yes. We went out today, apple picking, in a very safe social distance, fun way. And, she wore her little dress that says, forget princess, call me your honor. And it has all the female Supreme Court justices, including our dearly beloved RBG, who at the time of recording this passed away last night. Yeah, I was like, yeah, you're wearing that today, kid. You are.
Yeah. Look on our Facebook, probably it's on our Facebook page. Immediately, our coworkers set up an RBG display all over the place with all our RBG stuff.
And I loved seeing how much RBG stuff we had. I knew about all of it, but I hadn't really like seen it all together in a really long time. So that was awesome. We definitely had people messaging us last night being like, hey, can I have the descent pencils and the action figure? And so I was like, yeah, remind us on Monday when we're open. Yeah. What a lady.
May your Serafina and Cordelia grow up to be just as awesome.
Yeah, that's the goal. That is the goal.
Just as awesome. Never mind.
Just.
Sorry. I've been around my kids all day.
Yep. I love it. What have you guys been reading? How's reading going?
I just started reading a couple of these books. I've been in a big old slump for the last week or so because I've just been hard at work getting everyone's books out to them and it's all set. So the first book I started reading was To Sleep in a Sea of Stars, the new Polony book.
Oh, yeah. How is it?
Well, it is slow to start. Mm-hmm. This is his first book in a while. It is his first adult book, and it is a science fiction kind of space opera.
Oh, interesting.
It is a thick, chunky boy at 880 pages.
Wow.
Okay. Without footnotes.
It looks, this is the final. I'm showing. Yeah. I am showing
this is off. So good for the audio podcast now.
Well, it's audience, it's a lovely black book with a blue swirl on it.
Well, if you see the difference, the finished book looks a lot smaller than what I got for the arc.
Yeah, the arc is like a third longer. Just different font size, or?
I've been trying to figure this out because the formatting of the pages is the same. The type looks generally the same, like the same page for the same page. I'm assuming it's because the finished copy has nice paper and this one has, you know, generally arcs don't have very nice paper.
Yeah, so it might just be thicker paper.
That's the reason why there's a difference.
That's so funny. Yeah.
It's so dope, though.
The finished copy is like a quarter of an inch thinner than the advanced copy.
If listening at home, if you want to ask, I have photos of it. I can just send them to you. Like, it's bananas how, like,
put it on our Insta stories.
So anyways, this book, I'm going to have to read what the publisher has put out. So bear with me. During a routine survey mission on an uncolonized planet, Kira finds an alien relic. At first, she's delighted, but elation turns to terror when the ancient dust around her begins to move. As war erupts among the stars, Kara is launched into a galaxy-spanning odyssey of discovery and transformation. First contact isn't all what she imagined, and events push her to the very limits of what it means to be a human. While Kira faces her own horrors, Earth and its colonies stand upon the brink of annihilation. Now, Kira might be humanity's greatest and final hope. It is a first contact book about aliens in the future. The one sentence somebody told me about this book, and that's why I got hyped for it, other than it's Christopher Polony who wrote the Dragon trilogy or the Dragon series. I can't remember what that's called off the top of my head. Inheritance Cycle?
Erewhon?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Dragon books.
Right. The Dragon books that, like, the majority...
And he started writing when he was, like, 14 or something,
yeah.
Right? Like, and it was a homeschooler.
Yeah, it was a huge bestseller. I remember, like, people my age were reading it, and, like, this was, like, before Harry Potter got, like, super huge. This was kind of, like, the antithesis of the Harry Potter universe. A lot of... you were either, like, an Ingragon fan or, like... the Harry Potter fans at school, and I was seriously in Dragonland, and so I was really excited for this book. But the one thing somebody explained to me is, so there are no space dragons, but there are space squids.
Oh,
I was like,
Cthulhu, baby.
Yeah, very Lovecraftian.
Very Lovecraftian, and it's an adult science fiction book. So I'm I'm there. It's super good so far. It is a little slow to start. I'm right at the point where she has found the relic and the dust around her moves. And Polony is really good at just like building tension in a book very slowly. And then it just boils over really fast and your head just starts spinning. It's a really wonderful book. I'm going to enjoy this ride. And I'm like, let's get off of this thing so I can go read it some more. So that's To Sleep in a Sea of Stars by Christopher Polony. It's out now. It's really good. You should pick it up. We also have really cool swag for people who still want to buy it with the metal book plate.
Ooh, look at
that. And it's pretty hefty. It's kind of, it's really nice. And that's like a really cool thing that you could get with pre-orders, but we only had two pre-orders and we had like eight of these. So
they're beautiful laser cut metal bookmarks.
That's really
that
cool.
That say To Sleep in a Sea of Stars.
It's pretty.
Got her
lovely. Oh yeah. That's
a nice bookmark.
It's really cool. And like, if you buy the book from us, you get one.
You get one.
Cool now.
Swag.
That's right.
Bookstore swag.
And the second book I am halfway through is The Seven Half Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle by Stuart Turton.
There's like a series of these numbered death books.
I know. I can't keep up with them.
Well, I had picked this up thinking it was the 7.5 or the seven.
The 7 or 8 deaths of Stella Fortuna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we had the 7 husbands of Evelyn Hugo, and somebody yes. had been trying to tell me to read that, and I mixed up the title, so I picked this one up. I'm like, what the heck? This isn't what I thought it was
in between book.
But it's so awesome. Good. So the way I can describe this book is, it's a murder mystery that needs to be solved a la Groundhog Day. So somebody Ooh. Dies. Evelyn Hardcastle dies at this dinner party at 11 p.m. And the person that our point of view is, his name is Aiden Bishop. He's trying to solve the mystery of who killed her. But every time he falls asleep or the day is over, he gets killed in the book. It reverts back to the beginning of that day, like Groundhog Day. However, with this twist, he is now in the body of each person who is at that dinner.
Oh, cool.
And so he is in the point of view of the Baron at this dinner or the butler at this dinner the next night. And he's trying to solve this murder so he can stop going through this time loop and That's try really to, fun. You know, enjoy this lovely dinner party. It's really fun. It's a really good kind of, especially for now, because, you know, the now times is really rough, y'all. So this is a really good escapist book where you kind of don't mind being stuck in this time loop over and over again. I'd rather be in this time loop than right now.
Yeah.
So it's just a fun little murder mystery kind of book. Very much like Murder on the Orient Express, like
Agatha Christie, but with like a little fantasy twist kind of.
Yeah, it's really, it's just really a fun, good book. I mean, there's murder in it, so if you don't like murder, maybe go skip this book. It's not like gory, super gory murder. It's just, if you like Agatha Christie, you're gonna really like this book. It's a very modern, cute fantasy take on this genre. And it's in paperback, and a lot of people really like getting paperbacks right now.
Yeah.
It's been out for a bit. It's fun. So you should read that. That's 7.5.
That sounds great.
Yeah. That's 7.5 Deaths of Evelyn Hardcastle by Stuart Turton.
Nice.
That's what I'm reading.
Awesome. I just started reading the other day a book that actually, Kelso, you had set aside for me with a little cute little sticky note that said, hey, I think you would like this. It is Hench by Natalie Zena Walshots. It is really fun. It's about like henchmen, but it's like office jobs, basically. Like they like have to go to a temp agency and be like assigned little, you know, jobs based on their skills as henchman. And it's really fun. I just started it, but the main character, she just was assigned a job where at first she was just doing data entry, remotely for a supervillain. And then she did really well. And so they brought her in to be like on site, and the supervillain took a liking to her. And so he was like, okay, you're going to come to this super chill press conference with me. It's like not a big deal at all. You're just gonna like stand there and like look, you know, menacing but also pretty. Like it's fine. And mayhem happens, and there's a huge battle with like multiple superheroes, and she's just like, what is going on? Like she gets like swept aside by a superhero, and it's like she gets hit by a semi truck. Like she, like her leg shatters. She just is like, oh my god. Yeah, she's like, what have I got myself into? Like I was doing data entry. Like why am I doing this? Yeah, so it's really fun. I've been chuckling a lot to myself, but I'm enjoying it a ton. It's really good. That's about it. That's about all I've been reading because I have a newborn.
Yeah. Oh, Ryan, we should be like calling you up and reading to you.
I know. I like haven't had the mental capacity to like do anything. Like I haven't been able to like watch videos or anything. It's like I just sit and stare. It's really funny. I'm getting back into it though. I finished one book. I was like, all right, I'm slowly getting back into being able to focus on a story.
My sister sent me something. It was a takeoff on Goodnight Moon, the classic children's book. Goodnight Moon, Goodnight Zoom, Goodnight Sense of Impending Doom. She said that the night Ruth Bader Ginsburg died.
Oh no!
I know.
Yep.
Yep. So even children's books these days are. Okay, well, I will talk then about books that I've been reading. I don't think I've talked about this before. I was going to last time, but I didn't. But I want to recommend a memoir called Becoming Duchess Goldblatt.
Ooh.
This book, you're cracking up, Kelso. Why are you laughing? Do you know about this?
I know of the origin story of the book.
Yeah.
But it, you go.
So Duchess Goldblatt is a, this is a memoir of a fictional person.
Oh,
the person who became Duchess Goldblatt is apparently a woman with a young child going through a terrible divorce who worked in the publishing industry. And she was being very shattered by her experience. And so she began imagining a new persona for herself that could post. She started, I guess, posting on Facebook, and then she moved to Twitter. She got the name Duchess Goldblatt. It was you were supposed to make a combination of your first dog's name and your first boyfriend's last name or something like that. So that's how she came up with Duchess Goldblatt. And then from there, she picked this this painting by Rembrandt or somebody of a wealthy woman from the 1600s in a ruff and a cap who has a little wry grin on her face. And this woman just began trying to post tweets or to, I guess, originally to Facebook, like things that were as surreal as Monty Python, but as sweet as Mr. Rogers, combined into one. Like she just would post these lovely little ridiculous things. And gradually writers began taking notice of her. And she became more and more popular on Twitter. And so now she's written this memoir called Becoming Duchess Goldblatt. And it's basically about how she hits this bottom in her life, this terrible, terrible place. And she just reimagines herself as this other persona who is able to lift her out of her absolute misery and to accrues love from social media, which, you know, is not usually the case. Usually social media sends all the hate your way. So it's a very small little memoir, but it is funny and uplifting. If you've been through a divorce or a bad time in your life, it is really worth reading. She can be a little irritating sometimes, you know, it's a little much at some points, but she's hilarious and good for her. You know, she's taken this terrible event in her life and turned it into something that is very meaningful for a lot of people. I think it would be a very good gift to give during the holiday season to somebody who might need a little bucking up. So Becoming Duchess Goldblatt, a memoir by Anonymous. Then the next one I read, this book is terrific. I had seen good reviews of this and then just read it, and it is excellent. It's called True Story, a Novel by Kate Reed Petty. And this book begins in the 1990s. It's told from multiple points of view, and it's told in multiple different ways. Parts of it are sort of, you know, like memoirish. Parts of it are screenplays. Parts of it are written as college essays and drafts of college essays. Parts of it are like articles for newspapers. But it begins with a boy who's on a lacrosse team in, I think it's in New England, and they're bros. And they're out to have sex with as many girls as they possibly can and, you know, drink their way to oblivion and win the state championship. And one night there's a party, and there's a young woman there who gets really inebriated, and she is taken home by two of the lacrosse players who later come back and say that they had sex with her when she was unconscious. And it ruins her life. It ruins their lives, ruins multiple people's lives. And nobody really knows exactly what happens because it's been covered up. And so then it goes through about the next 20 years of what happens to these people. And then they all come back together again. Hmm. And you find out some of the truth of what happened that night. But it reads like a thriller. It is very hard to put down. It's a compelling story. And it very much speaks to the discomfort I think many people have with the desire to absolutely believe the experience of a person who's been sexually assaulted, but also the not knowing what really happened. And also that in describing what happened, maybe for the men, there is a reason to lie about what really happened, to make yourself more manly. Mm-hmm. Than you actually are, and how that excessive machoism is so destructive to the men as well.
Yeah.
It is such a book for this moment, and it is it's just a good read, and then it's also a super thoughtful read. So highly recommended, True Story, a Novel by Kate Reed Perry. I've been reading for nonfiction, A History of the Vikings, Children of Ash and Elm by Neil Price. This is, Kelso, this will compete with your book.
Another big one.
It's also like, well, no, it's only 600 pages long, sorry, and that includes the footnotes. But this is like, if you're interested in Vikings, this is a really good new book about Vikings, the latest archaeology. Also, it very much focuses on women, so who are very often left out of Viking history. So if you're a nonfiction reader and you like Vikings, it's a great one. And then the last thing I want to talk about is a novel by somebody who I know personally. She's an acquaintance who lives here in my same town. Our kids went to school together. Her name is Sarah McCraw Crow, and she has written this book, The Wrong Kind of Woman, that Gibson's is going to be holding an event for in October. And I'm so delighted that Sarah has had this book published. She's a very smart, thoughtful person. And you know, she's a person who's been writing for years and now in middle age is getting published, which is kind of wonderful. And by a big publisher too. And this is a book about a woman in 1970 who lives in a college town in New Hampshire. Her husband is a college professor. he drops dead. And all of a sudden she's kind of left out on her own. And she kind of takes up with these feminists on campus who are like not regarded well by the old guard. And what happens? So Sarah is going to be on Zoom talking about this book. I'm not sure exactly what date it is, but we
I know it's in October.
Yeah. And I've just begun it, and it is like one of those kind of Sue Miller type books where you just like, you just dive right in, you know, you just start reading it and you're going to find it hard to put down until you get to the end. And so yay, Sarah, I think it's going to do very well, and tune into that Zoom. It's going to be great.
That will be October 6th.
October 6th. Yes.
At 7 on Zoom. We will have those links in the show notes. So, and on social media as well. Awesome. So, okay. So we are a podcast that chats about all things literary, and there's been a lot of literary stuff happening super recently. And the first thing I want to talk about, I don't know, I'm sure our listeners are aware of this at this point, but for those who aren't, in recent years, J.K. Rowling has shown herself to be transphobic, quite frankly. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And it seems like she just keeps doubling down and defending herself instead of apologizing. And, you know, as of recording this, I think it was like last week, she came out with even more really terrible statements against trans women in particular. And it's one of those things where I was curious for your thoughts, because for me, like, you know, there's definitely an aspect of trying to separate the art from the artist, right? Because Harry Potter was a huge part of my life growing up, as it was for, I know, so many people. And, you know, it was an important series. It you know, really inspired a generation of kids to read. It, you know, sparked imaginations. It's full of magic. It's beautiful, whatever. And so there's, you know, there's something to be said of like, okay, well, we'll reclaim the series, which has sort of been the mantra for the last year or so of like, we'll just pretend that they like appeared out of nowhere. There was no author. It, you know, she doesn't exist anymore. Like, what have you. However, it has also been pointed out that the series itself has problematic aspects to it, right? Like, there are harmful racial stereotypes. There are moments of sort of, gosh, there's fat shaming. There's obviously child abuse. There's problematic aspects to these books, right? And so, it's kind of this interesting, I'm in an interesting place because, and this is where I'm curious for what your thoughts are, because I'm in a place of like, these books were so important to me. I would love to, you know, I would love for them to still be a part of my life, because to completely take them out of my life feels wrong. Like, it's difficult for me to even fathom it. And, you know, I would love to introduce my children to these books that totally changed my life. But I also need to like look at them with a critical eye and I guess kind of like acknowledge the fact that like, yeah, these books were super important to me and amazing, but also like they're problematic and the author is super problematic. So like, I'm in a weird place about this. And I think a lot of the literary world is in a weird place right now, with not knowing how to react to all of this. So I don't know what you guys are thinking in regards to this whole issue.
I've had this conversation with Michael Herman, the owner of our bookstore, a bunch of times over the past 8 years, because this happens all the time.
Right.
That a beloved author is revealed to be kind of a hideous human being.
Right.
And I think what I always said, I think the last time this happened was with
Sherman Alexie was a recent one.
Yeah, Sherman Alexie. I think that was it. And and what I said to Michael is, look, if we took every book out of this store that was written by a jerk, by a hideous human being who did bad things to people, half the books in the store would go out the door.
Right.
You know, this is the truth.
Yeah.
A lot of people who are brilliant are terrible people. Mm-hmm. So I do feel like you have to separate the book from the author. Mm-hmm. So I would say, by all means, introduce your children to Harry Potter. Don't ever let them meet J.K. Rowling.
Right.
And I say this as the mother of a transgender daughter. Mm-hmm. I find her I am just appalled by what she is doing. She is what is called a TERF, mm-hmm. you know, a transgender phobic.
Radical
feminist. And I was so angry about this whole TERF thing mm-hmm. for years now, because it's been going on for a very long time. Jermaine Greer was the starter of this, who wrote the most disgusting essay about a transgender woman who came up to her and said, "Your writing on feminism has changed my life. Thank you so much." And Jermaine Greer's response was, "You're a disgusting person. You are not a woman. Get away." Okay. That is just reprehensible. Yeah. So, you know, I come at it from that perspective. But I want to just bring in another book here because it helped me understand this so much. We just did in our book club, Caste by Isabel Wilkerson. Mm-hmm. And Isabel Wilkerson talks about caste as being, you know, you have the upper caste and the lower caste, and you just figure out a way to define which caste is which, right? Mm-hmm. So in America, like if you're black, you're lower caste. If you're white, you're upper caste. However, if you're a woman, you're lower in the upper caste than mm-hmm. white men are, right? So if you look, England is the home of TERF philosophy, right? And that is a class conscious society. Mm-hmm. Like people there are obsessed with, are you of royal blood? Are you working class? What's your accent like? Blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. Very class conscious. And so in my opinion, what is going on there is there are women, especially white women in sort of the middle class to upper class, who don't want anybody getting into their caste from below. And so J.K. Rowling and Jermaine Greer and people like that are like getting up on the ramparts and pouring hot oil down on transgender women. Yeah. And it's not okay.
No. Yeah. And it's so frustrating that it's, you know, like she just... Like I said, she just keeps doubling down. Like she just keeps like digging her heels in and ignoring everyone who's pointing out like, hey, this is terrible. And like your books were really important to the LGBTQ community. And now you're just like disowning them. And instead of hearing that and apologizing, she just keeps digging the hole deeper, and she'll find like the few people who agree with her, and she'll just retweet them and what have you. And her latest book, written as Robert Galbraith, features a serial killer, a cis white man who dresses up as a woman to murder women. And it's just another example of her being like, trans women are evil, trans people are evil. Like, it just...
Well, and that isn't even, like, you know, like people are talking about this as character as being a transvestite, which itself is like such a freaking offensive term.
Yeah.
This is a person who is cross-dressing. Okay,
yes.
Let's talk about it like that. Like this is not a
transgender
woman. Right. Except, excuse me, J.K. Rowling, you might be a little sensitive to the fact that people are upset with you about this. Like, why would you even do this except to pour salt in the wound?
It's so weird to me to try to reconcile the J.K. Rowling from my childhood, who, you know, created this magical world, and, you know, Hogwarts will always be there to welcome you home, and all this, like, she was so full of love and light, it seemed like. And now it's like, I don't know. It's really hard to reconcile. And I say this recognizing that the folks in the LGBTQ community and people of color have been pointing out her problematic issues for a long time that I personally did not see for a long time because of my own privilege. I am recognizing that right now. I am not saying that she was a good person back then. I'm saying I did not see it. And so now seeing it and recognizing it is jarring and upsetting to realize that, you know, they were so important in my life. Like, these books really truly were like, they got me through middle school and high school. Like, they saved me. And so,
well, you also look at the issues that she dealt with in those books, like, for all the flaws in them, those books foretell neo-fascism of today.
Yeah.
You know, Voldemort, come on.
Yeah.
Look around at what is going on in terms of the neo-fascists all across Europe and in this country right now. Mm-hmm. Like, she was on point for a lot of stuff, which makes it so tragic that she can't, like have the self-perception to say, oh, can I rethink this? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Excuse me. I mean, an apology would be a start. It's hard because, again, like, the books, despite being problematic in a lot of parts, are also, you know, they do have really beautiful messages of love and of acceptance and... it's just really, like, I don't know, they were such a good escape. And so I think sort of where I've come down on the issue right now is, cause I really was grappling a lot with, like, do I get rid of my books? Like, do I just fully get rid of my Harry Potter books? Do I, like, get rid of my Harry Potter stuff? Because I feel really weird, like, wearing Harry Potter merch right now. But I think where I've kind of landed right now is I'm going to not display them. I'm just going to move them because right now, you know, they've been living in my main bookcase in my living room. I think I'm just going to, like, move them into my fantasy bookcase. Like, they're not going to be displayed prominently. And, you know, when my kids are old enough to start reading them, we'll read them together. And I think I'll just be, like, really hyper aware of being able to read them critically and to point out things when we come across them of, like, hey, can you see this racial stereotype in this character and how that's not great? And we've learned since this was written that this is, you know, a bad take, and you know, we don't stereotype like this, and things like that. Like, I think that's kind of where I'm at, is to sort of just be aware of them and to recognize the problems in them, and try to stop the cycle of terrible. But
yeah, I have to say too, there have been people who came in to pre-order the Robert Galbraith, the mm-hmm. new one.
Yeah.
And my daughter works in the bookstore and has been dealing with people buying the book. Mm-hmm. And it's all I can do not to like say, don't buy this book.
Yeah, it's
and
hard.
I know you're saying, like, it's like we don't want to discourage people from buying books, but this one is hurting my heart.
Yeah.
No,
I think an important thing that we can do right now is to remind folks that there are books other than Harry Potter, books other than the Robert Galbraith series, that are brilliant stories, beautifully written, and are not problematic or written by bad people.
Although tomorrow we might find out that
yeah. Sure. one never really knows, I guess. But you know, and I think I suspect we will have either a display or a list on the website in the coming days of. Do we already have that, Kelso?
We have one. So perfect. I don't mean to jump on you.
No, go for it.
Okay. Before I get into my long diatribe.
Yes, I'm sure you have thoughts.
As a person who identifies as a lesbian, mm-hmm. I do want to make two big disclaimers, where I do want to let folks know who do listen to this that our opinions here definitely don't reflect the opinions of the bookstore at all.
Oh, sure. Yeah, these are personal.
Just thoughts. These are personal opinions. I think everybody understands that. At least our audience members are very understanding of that. But I feel like it needs to be said just in case. Mm-hmm. So there's number one. Number two, I am personally not a trans person or a non-binary person, so I cannot speak to the experiences of non-binary or trans persons mm-hmm. as a queer person myself.
Right.
I feel like that distinction is important with what I'm going to be saying. Just so everybody is understanding where I'm coming from.
For sure. Yep.
I did not read Harry Potter as a kid. I was very much not into magical Harry Potter fantasy series very much, except for the Christopher Polony Dragon stuff. Anyways, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. So I didn't come into Harry Potter land until I was in my mid-20s. And I read them at a very confusing and weird time in my life. And it really did help me break out of this reading slump I was having. The story was very enjoyable. I liked them. As a 24-year-old, reading them as the context of somebody who'd never read these before. And you can see in the series that these kids who have read this grow up with.
Yeah.
The storyline gets darker, the plot gets thicker, there are more darker elements to it that older kids would understand. My mom was a huge Harry Potter fan growing up, and she always wanted me to watch them. We read them. She's a huge fan of it. Mm-hmm. And then after we found out that J.K. Rowling is transphobic, we were very upset, you know, my mom more so, because she has Harry Potter memorabilia and all these wonderful, we had ornaments that she put up on Christmas. It was really, it was rough for her. I will never tell people what they can and can't read.
Right.
it's not my story or journey to tell anybody as a bookseller, as a person, as a lesbian, what people should and should not read. If you want to read the new Robert Galbraith, please buy it at my store so I can make money as a lesbian person who also has coworkers that are non-binary and trans. Right. Like, we want that money. Like, I'm not gonna, I have to separate the bookseller making money to live.
Yeah.
And a person who absolutely hates that this person is awful. Like, she's right. just awful. I feel like all of us can agree on that, especially yeah. a lot of people listening, yeah. you know, can agree to that. When I was thinking about how to separate this person from her text, it reminded me of this literary philosophical ideal that Roland Barthes came up with back in the 60s called Death of the Author.
Mm-hmm.
And is essentially what the essay that Barthes had boiled down to is once you start trying to insert the author into a text that you are reading, you're imposing a limit on that text.
Hmm.
So when you're trying to read a story or a piece of text purely from a standpoint of the text, especially to read critically, you have to separate the mm-hmm. artist and their beliefs from the text you're reading. It can be done. The problem with Harry Potter in particular, where a lot of people cannot make Death of the Artist with Harry Potter, is J.K. Rowling has ingrained herself into this universe so much. She had, before we all realized that she was transphobic and problematic, mm-hmm. she would answer audience questions. She would mm-hmm. build things into her stories. She has made a franchise out of this. She wrote The Crimes of Grindelwald, I think is what they're called.
Yeah.
The post-Harry Potter in America.
And like the Fantastic Beasts and all this, like, all this extra stuff.
So she has inserted herself into this world so much so that it is very difficult for a lot of people, especially people who are huge Harry Potter nerds, mm-hmm. to separate that. She has inserted herself into this narrative. Harry Potter is J.K. Rowling, J.K. Rowling is Harry Potter, and it is super difficult. Also to the fact that there are a lot of stereotyped and negative allegories in her books that as kids you don't really pick up on, but as adults reading this text and analyzing it, it's very troubling. So for me personally, I cannot separate J.K. Rowling from Harry Potter. She mm-hmm. is the same. It's synergized to a point where I can't separate that. And it's difficult. It's way more difficult for people who have more of a push for her, who have grown up with her, who have gotten through with it. So Ryan, I totally can't understand that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they are classic books.
Yeah.
And we all understand and can think critically of these classic books. We can enjoy classics by people who are problematic. I myself really enjoy books by terrible human beings. One of my favorite authors in college was David Foster Wallace, and he was not a good person.
Mm.
Joan Diaz wrote A Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, which was my favorite book for years. Turns out he's not a good person either. Yeah. But he also didn't really inject himself into the narrative of his book when he wrote it.
True.
So
I think my feeling about this is, going forward, I will never buy another book written by J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
You know, and so I've got a cutoff point.
Mm-hmm.
She came out as a terrible human being. She would like to say that my daughter does not exist.
Right.
Then my daughter is a fantasy in my daughter's own mind.
Right.
And that is obliterating a child I gave birth to. And that is not acceptable at all. And so J.K. Rowling is dead to me now.
Yeah.
I will never buy anything that has, that will ever give her money ever, ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's yeah. And Kelsey, you're so right. Like she, she's totally like immersed herself in the text. Like there are not many authors that I would be able to pick out. Like if I was walking down the street, right, and I would look up and be like, oh, that's insert author here, right? Usually authors are like, it's just a name to me. And then, you know, it's, if I make a connection with them, then okay, great. Now I have a connection with them. But the vast majority of authors are sort of just like, oh, it's the person who wrote this book. And then I just sort of like move on with the book. But J.K. Rowling was so prevalent. You think about all of the movie premieres, all of the midnight book releases, like she was always like in the public eye. She was so ingrained in, like, we all knew who exactly she was. Well, you know,
We thought.
And, you know, it was one of those things where it was like, she was so beloved by like the cast of the movies and things like that. Like she seemed so sweet and wonderful. And we loved the story of her, like coming up with the idea, writing it on a napkin at a restaurant. And, you know, and she was a struggling single mom and this saved her life. We loved her story. We loved, like, we knew, Potterheads knew so much. Like we felt like we knew her. We felt like she was this like benevolent being who gifted us this magical series. And so to find out that she just does not accept that a huge chunk of her fan base exists and deserves to exist, like it's heartbreaking, especially because I know how important these books were specifically to the LGBTQ community, you know. And it's just, I mean, like you see so many pieces of art, of Harry Potter art, with this quote of, you know, nobody should live in a closet, or nobody deserves to live in a closet. Like there's all these like metaphors, right, of Harry coming out of his closet, and you know, there were all these like beautiful metaphors that folks took from these books. And so to have this person be like, oh, by the way, trans women don't exist and shouldn't exist, is like, okay, well, now you don't exist. Like it's just so enraging and heartbreaking at the same time.
This is how I've been trying to remedy it, because there have been in my community, in my personal LGBT bubble, I've had people who I have seen physically, literally burn their Harry Potter books and would do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But I also have sympathy for the folks who it's so ingrained for them that it's very difficult to let that part of them go. It's like when your mom tells you they hate you and they really are just like awful. It's got to be something like that.
Yeah.
So what I have come to realize, at least in the community that I've been seeing, is queer people are really good for taking back things that should be ours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I really enjoy seeing is the community of LGBT Harry Potter fans coming together, celebrating the book the way they want to celebrate this text.
Mm-hmm.
They are making their own art and sharing that with themselves. Not a dime goes to her at all.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a very beautiful way to transform this beloved series for people. And that's how, and again, this is my opinion, Yeah. I will never buy any Harry Potter or J.K. Rowling book that she has made ever again. I never really bought her. I bought her books used, so I don't really have a leg to stand on.
Yeah.
When it comes to that. But, you know, and of course, other people's opinions are different. So, but if a trans person has wrote this really dope Harry Potter poster, I'm going to buy that from that person because I'm giving right. a trans person money instead of her. Or yeah. these really cool socks that somebody knitted and they are a gay person who loved Harry Potter. I'm going to buy those socks from them. Like, sure. we're going to take your, I feel like it's a mm-hmm. great idea to try to take Harry Potter back mm-hmm. from this terrible human being. If that's what people want to do. But mm-hmm. I totally understand when people want to burn her freaking books. I totally get it. I'm never going to buy anything that she comes out with again. She's problematic as heck, and yep. she doesn't deserve any of my money, and
yeah,
that's just how it be, dude. So, like, I just, and the same thing that I really like, that is the silver lining that has come out of this for me, is a lot of people in the LGBT community and the book community at large are discovering books that are like Harry Potter series.
Yes.
Or they're writing books
yes.
that have positive LGBT representation.
Mm-hmm.
They're discovering these books. Books that are written by trans and gay authors
mm-hmm.
are coming out of the woodwork and going, read this instead. This is yeah. fantastic. If you liked Harry Potter, you're going to love this.
Yeah.
And around a few months ago, I came up with a very small selection, which I need to go in and make bigger, a very small selection on our website of magical books for every age.
Mm.
And a lot of the books on that list that I had created for the store are LGBTQ+ authors, or they have positive queer representation in them. Awesome. And if you really want more things, like, just come up and ask any of the booksellers. Mm-hmm. It will definitely give you recommendations that are not Harry Potter based.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think, yeah. I will say before I sort of change subjects on the topic of folks kind of like making their own, you know, taking back the series, I have one friend who her husband wrote a really, really sweet sort of two-page, very short graphic novel, like a scene from a graphic novel, in which there's a character at Hogwarts who is trans, and basically the gist of the comic is that the character is talking to a professor, and I can't remember which professor it is, but they're talking to the professor, and the professor is, first they sort of like say goodbye to their roommate, and then they go and talk to the professor, and the professor's like, all right, you should be all set now, you should be able to go in, and the character has transitioned and can now go into the other dormitory. It's really beautiful. And so my friend's husband wrote this little comic and had it bound into their illustrated edition, and they had that edition recovered with the trans flag.
That is so sweet.
Isn't that beautiful?
Oh my God. Take back the J.K. Yes. Rowling. That is
so
awesome.
I love that. And then I have another friend who every time J.K. Rowling tweets something transphobic, she donates to a charity to help trans folks. And she also has been, she has like some first edition signed copies of the books that she has been either auctioning off for charity or donating to trans folks so that they can auction them off. So there is some good coming of this terrible situation. Yeah, it's hard. And listeners, if you're on the same page with us, just know that like we as booksellers are also struggling. it's hard for all of us to see a beloved author show their true colors. But
Ryan, do you believe? I just feel like she must be good at heart. I'm sorry. Like, there's something in me that's like, JK, you could want not to have think written that. These books. You couldn't have written these books if you were
it
not.
It does feel like a different person, doesn't it? Like, it does it feel does. Like a totally
it's
different
like she's,
person.
It's like the Voldemort part yeah. of her.
Yeah.
It's well, like, does she need an exorcism?
She split her soul too many times. She has too many horcruxes.
Oh, yeah.
We got to find them.
We got to find the horcruxes and destroy them. Yeah, no, it's, yeah, it's really, it is difficult to think about it. And I think it's possibly more difficult because she is, you know, alive and still somewhat relevant, and she's tweeting and she's doing this, like,
and she won't in our day.
Yeah, and she won't stop talking. Yeah, as opposed to when you find out that an author you loved was, you know, racist or homophobic, but they are long since dead, and so they're not,
and they can't apologize,
continuously hurting the community, whereas she is continuously hurting the community. But you know, I digress on that.
I wish our listeners could see the faces.
I know we're so
we are all so distraught.
We're just like cringing,
and like our faces are just like smushed in misery.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard, and you know, I know so many bibliophiles started out as Potterheads, and so you know, we're here for you. We commiserate. We have recommendations for other books. And if you want to hold on to your Harry Potter books, we won't judge you for it. I'm holding on to mine. Yeah.
I'm never letting go of mine. And I've got I've got the tapes.
Yeah. 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 The audiobook. Yeah. It's just, it's heartbreaking. It's really hard. But yeah. So anyway, so that's one piece of literary news. I'm going to swerve into somewhat lighter news, I guess. Let's talk about pre-orders. From a much better human being. So to start, I will say that all of the time, pre-orders are great. Pre-orders are great, especially from indie bookstores, because when you pre-order a book by an author that you're excited for, that tells the bookstore how many copies to order, how many copies to get into the store. It helps the author get onto the New York Times bestseller list. It helps their numbers. It helps their printing runs. It's great. There's literally no downside to pre-ordering. Always pre-order your books, especially from us. This year, it's even more important because, you know, there have been shipping delays all year, et cetera. And we in the book world have been told for weeks, months now that this holiday season, there are going to be crazy, crazy backups at the printing. And we sort of didn't really know why. We assumed it was because, you know, everything was being pushed back. So many books that were supposed to come out in like March, April, May were pushed back to the fall to like, they thought maybe coronavirus would be gone by then. Oops. you know, and so we were sort of like, well, that makes sense that there's going to be like backups at the printing press. So yeah, pre-orders are going to be important. You're going to want to order and purchase your holiday shopping super early. Yeah, that makes sense. And then it was announced that our darling, dearest, beloved Barack Obama is writing a book, and the first printing has 3 million copies.
Bananas, you guys. Bananas.
I cannot express to you how humongous of a printing that is. Like, that is the most insane first printing I have ever heard of, to the point where it is taking up at least two of the biggest printing presses in the United States, and they are also printing it in, I believe, Germany. They're using one of their biggest printing houses to fulfill this demand.
So here's some facts about this huge book coming out November 17th. It's called A Promised Land. It is the first volume in a two-volume set. It is 768 pages with photos. Oh. It is going to be released worldwide. This is a big, big deal. This is a big old book. So the best part about this is not only are you getting all of these print, these major prints coming out in order to bind this book and ship it out to 3.3 million copies in the first print run, which will definitely sell out, no problem.
Insane.
The thing about the reason why you want to pre-order these books, not because if you're an Obama fan, you want to get this book, cool. But if you're not into this Obama craze at all, you know, our president, your book might get pushed back. You know, there's only going to be limited run prints of other major titles like Addie LaRue, which is a B.E. Schwab book that is coming out in October. Like, she might not have a second run of that book after her first run gets printed until maybe January, right? Because this Obama book is so big.
Yeah.
There are other major books that are coming out for the holidays that are not as big as the Obama book, but people are excited for. Get on that now. Like, get the pre-orders for that now so that the publishers know that what they're going to have to print in this very limited amount of time.
So you're saying get on to pre-order the not Obama,
the non-Obama book. Right? I mean, go ahead and pre-order Obama too. But
I was going to talk about a book today that I didn't talk about. It was supposed to be published on September 1st in the U.S. It came out in Canada. It hasn't been published. It has no publication date now. It's an excellent book, but I can't recommend it because I don't know when people can get it.
Yep.
So if you have an author that you love and whose book you are looking forward to, get out there and pre-order it.
Yeah.
Because I love Barack Obama, but you know what? I don't think he should take up all the slots for publication for the next.
He's like single-handedly destroying the publishing this year.
I'm killing all the authors.
It's so fun. Yeah. It is. Yeah, this is like, this is so unprecedented. Like, usually, I don't know, a big first printing run is like a couple hundred thousand copies.
Yes.
That's like a big run, right?
Do you know how many Michelle's books sold?
I don't.
That's an interesting, Kelso, you can look this up on Google right now, I bet.
Yeah.
Look at you. You're like,
she's like, I got this.
For an example, for Michelle Obama's book, Becoming, it has sold more than 8.1 million units in the United States since it was published in fall of 2018.
And it is still only in hardcover.
People. Yes.
But that's like, from the fall of 2018 until fall of 2020. That's what, 3 years?
What do you think their first publication was? How many million?
Their like, first printing?
I bet it was 500,000, something like that.
It was it was around that. It was less than a million. It was like 500K to 700K, I think.
Probably somewhere around there.
That's but that was still a very big book.
And that was a huge book. Like, that was like a big deal when that came out.
And this is going to be an even bigger deal because it's
the
president.
Insane. Like, 3 million. I can't. So yes. So the point is, if you want the Obama book, absolutely pre-order the Obama book because things are crazy and bookstores need to know how many they need to order. But also, pre-order any books from any authors you like. If you have a passing thought of, I might want this book, it's coming out in October or November, get it. Pre-order it because you're not going to be able to get your hands on it. Bookstores are going to have a really hard time getting them. Books are going to be delayed leading up to the holidays. The holidays are already a hard time to order books because things get backed up. And that's in like normal times. Now we have COVID-19. So we have fewer people working at the publishing houses and the printing houses. Like they are, you know, social distancing. So there's fewer workers available. And now those few people are all dedicated to printing this Obama book. If you want to buy books for the holidays, which we, you know, encourage, order them now, buy them now, and understand that there's going to be delays and you can't come in the week before Christmas and special order a book and hope that it'll be here by Christmas. It's not going to happen.
And the other strange thing that's happening is you can't even depend on the backlist. Like right. This is stuff that's already been published, but because of a big interest in Black Lives Matter's book, for example, there are all of these books that have been out for years that all of a sudden are in high demand, or also like books around Native Americans, like Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Kimmerer. This book came out, I think, in 2014. It's been out a long time, and it's a beautiful book. This woman is a botanist as well as a wonderful writer. It's about traditions with plants and nature. It's just lovely. It's beautifully written. And I don't know who promoted it, but somehow, maybe 6 months ago, might have been on Oprah, somebody promoted this book, and it has stayed on the paperback bestseller list ever since. And we can't keep up with it. The publisher is not republishing it fast enough for us to keep it in the store. And there are dozens of books like this. So if there's anything on a backlist that you think you might want, get your name in for it now, because it's not necessarily gonna be there when you come in looking for it.
Yeah, so do your holiday shopping now. Buy your books now. Just like do it now. Do it now. What else are you doing? You're in quarantine.
And also, can I just say, like, COVID could get a lot worse.
Right. It's not going anywhere.
But like right now, you can come into our bookstore and you can shop. You got to wear a mask. Your kids have to wear a mask. If you bring your baby in a stroller, we'd like them to have a cover over them.
Yep.
But you can come in and you can talk to booksellers. We can recommend stuff for you. We can order things for you. Mm-hmm. Right now, you can do it.
Yeah.
In a month or two,
who knows?
Lord knows what's going to happen.
Who knows? So do your shopping now. Get your pre-orders in for whatever you want, whatever you're looking at. We talked about Addie LaRue. Guys, order that book. V.E. Schwab, The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue. It's phenomenal.
It's so good.
It is a delicious fantasy, incredible, incredible novel.
Did you say the plot? The plot is great.
Oh, it's, yes.
Before, but say it again.
It's so good. So Addie LaRue makes a deal with the devil, basically, or a devil-like creature. And she's going to live forever-ish. The terms are vague. It gets into it. But basically, she is utterly forgotten. So the second she leaves someone's line of sight, they forget her immediately. They forget her entire existence.
Not the perfect parable for modern life,
right?
Like the second you are
utterly forgettable,
social media, you are forgotten.
You are forgotten. We forget you exist. And so she lives decades, centuries this way of fleeting in and out of people's lives instantly, right? And kind of forging her way through life, and then she meets someone, and they remember her. And that is where our story begins. And this is one of those books that you will just hug and treasure. And when it's over, you might start reading it again from the beginning.
But it's super duper long.
It is very long. It is so well written. I think she worked on this book. I think she had the first idea for this book like 9 years ago and has been sort of like picking at it since then. You can tell it's such a labor of love.
This is her breakout literary fiction.
Yeah, that's a
good that's how it's been promoted by the publisher.
I'm not sure
I actually agree. I think it is still very much fantasy, but
it is still fantasy, but I can see where it does actually toe more into literary.
If you have read her other work, because I'm a huge fan of hers.
Yeah.
This is different from anything that she has written.
Yes.
Her Shadow series, her kids YA middle grade series, all of it is completely different from this book. It is, and I'm not kidding you, as a V.E. Schwab fan myself, a Schwabist, this is the best book she's ever written. Mm-hmm. I am, hands down, this is good for everybody. If you are a huge fan, if you are going to be a first time person coming into this and you want to read more of her stuff, like, this is a good way to start. This is icing on the cake. She knocked this out of the park. Anyway.
And it's like, it's one of those books where like you look at it and you're like, this is a long book. And then you start it and you just and don't put it down.
Yeah. It doesn't feel long at all. Yeah.
It is delicious.
It goes by so fast.
What a great book. So go order that book and maybe you'll have it by Christmas.
You know how different the taste of all three of us is?
Yeah.
All three of us love it. Really good book.
Also, Elizabeth read it and she loved it. And I feel like I feel like maybe Joe read it and they loved it. I forget. I feel like a lot of our booksellers have read it and loved it.
I think it's wide appeal.
It's incredible.
I want to hear the book on tape. I bet the book on tape is great.
I really want to listen to the audiobook. I think it's going to be beautiful. This is going to be one of those books that I think I end up having multiple editions of. Like, I think I'm going to have one that I lend out to people and then like a fancy edition for myself. So yeah, pre-order. If you want ideas for pre-orders, ask a bookseller. We have lots of ideas. We have lots of things we want you to pre-order. Coming events. We're still doing all virtual events, virtual book clubs, all that good stuff. Check our calendar because we're adding things like, you know, the week before. So go on our website and look at our events calendar. Follow us on all the social medias. We are constantly posting things. And also check out, we have a link on our website where we have all of our past event recordings. Go look through those. We've had some really fun ones that we recorded and they're just like up on our YouTube channel. You can just go watch the whole event. So go check that out. Gibsonsbookstore.com. Click around, find some good stuff. A reminder about our partnership with Libro FM. Our listeners who are new to Libro FM can receive 3 digital audiobooks for the price of 1 credit by using the code LAYDOWN at checkout when they start a new membership. That's a really great deal, folks. Yeah. Just trust me. Take advantage. If you're not already doing Libro FM, like, jump on it. What are you waiting for? You can gift audiobooks. Here's a fun thing, talking about all the issues with the printing. Audiobooks are digital and you can gift them to people and you can gift memberships. So if there's a book that you know you're not going to be able to get a physical copy of for someone, you can buy them that digital audiobook through Libro FM. Gibson's gets a cut and that person will have their book on in time for the holidays. So there's a hot tip for you. All right. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com. And we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye.
Bye.